Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, this certainly is a big day. In fact, we have a little bit of an abbreviated show today simply because I have the privilege of being on with Emerald Robinson at 11 o'clock Eastern. Central Time, 12 o'clock Eastern. You'll be able to blah, blah, blah. Start again, Greg. Gee, I'm not too excited, am I? You'll be able to watch this on Lindell TV at frankspeech.com. And so that's going to be fabulous. We're actually recording the show at 9 Central, so that'd be 10 Eastern, and that's how it's going to go. But we do have an abbreviated show, so let's get to the lovely and talented Bill Fetke and see what's on his mind today.
Hold on tight. Action Radio presents the Fetke Report.
Good morning, Action Radio Land. We have a lot to talk about today. Ozzy Osbourne is leaving America.
What?
The GOP, the spineless GOP, once again, is going to file articles of impeachment. Okay. And then Biden tomorrow, I'm making a prediction right now. Tomorrow night, Biden will be declaring MAGA fans terrorists. That is what I'm declaring, that he's going to declare that tomorrow night. But I want to start off first, Greg, with, to me, this was the most surprising news that I've heard in a very long time.
Program?
No. Gorbachev died at the age of 91.
Right.
What I'm surprised about was I thought he was already dead.
No. Politically, he hasn't done anything for a while. In fact, I remember when I was a tour guide in San Francisco and we used to go through the Presidio after our Golden Gate Bridge visit. And you could see Mikhail Gorbachev's house that he had. He had this beautiful, part of the fort. It was like one of the luxury quarters for his world, peace federation or whatever it was called. So he was in San Francisco for a long time. I don't remember him ever coming out and walking around so we could yell, "Hey, Gorby." but we couldn't do that. He was there, and so he's been around for a while, but I didn't know how old he was. So 91, well, most of his stuff was done in the 80s with Ronald Reagan, when they met at Reykjavik and some of the other things. But yeah, but he's not too well thought of in the former Soviet Union, especially by Putin, who wants to restore the Soviet Union. So it's where do you go from presiding over the destruction?
To you is this, is who was a more peaceful president, Gorbachev or George Bush?
Well, Bush, brought us into the Iraq War. And then Bush the younger, who wanted to make up for daddy's mistakes, which the biggest one was going into the Iraq War, did it again. So in terms of who's the more peaceful, Gorbachev.
Kind of sad, isn't it?
but we've got an imperial war class. I'll tell you what's interesting. We'll pick this up another day, but I was reading about the history of Taiwan. I found an article that really says that militarily Taiwan is better off with us not having them, because they got this pretty much figured out. But what was fascinating if you know that, I didn't know that. Okay, so this is news to me. We can talk about it maybe next week or something. But the problem is that we gave China to the communists. So the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the rise of China now, it's all the result of our own communists in our State Department, different parts of the Truman administration. We withheld arms from the nationalists, Chiang Kai-shek, who wanted a constitutional, government republic. And so the very things that we say we want, apparently our government doesn't want. And this is a long-established pattern. And I'm going to start to do some history tracing from the Russian Revolution, which I'm sure we backed somehow. I just have to find the details, all the way through the permanent war class. Now we're in Ukraine.
I watched a special last night, and it really went into detail about exactly what you're kind of talking about and how Eisenhower warned us and before he left office that we are no longer a republic, that we are governed now by warmongers, basically, in the war machine.
I call permanent war class. Yeah, same thing.
Yeah. And so that's where we're at, but we'll talk about that another day.
Okay.
Ozzy Osbourne is leaving America. This is huge.
Well, is he a citizen? He's from Britain.
No, of course
so
not.
Is he a citizen? So leaving America means he's just going home.
Exactly. That's what it is. But his quote I agree with, but his reasoning I don't. Quote is, America
quote?
Has just gotten too crazy.
Well, that's because it allowed a coup to take over the government. We're not supposed to do that. We're Americans. How does Ozzy Osbourne define too crazy?
The coup happened long before Biden.
Oh, okay. But how does Ozzy Osbourne define too crazy? I mean, look at the reference point.
Well, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. You know, like I said, I agree with his quote. I don't agree with his reasoning. His reasoning is that he's blaming too much gun violence in America, shootings at malls and schools. That is his reasoning why. But really what it comes down to is the guy's 73 years old or 83 or 93 or 203, who knows. And he is in bad health. He just wants to die at home is really what it comes down to.
Hmm. Yeah, rockers do have a kind of a tougher life. That makes sense. You know, a lot of folks, actors have done that. You know, various people have come here to make their fortune, then they go home. You know, once they made their money, of course, then they have to pay the taxes. that might kill them right there. But yeah, it's an interesting situation. But the biggest problem we have, you know, if they reported the times that guns save lives as much as they reported the few times that these mass public shootings, but a mass public shooting is three people. Well, three is, you know, that's like saying a genocide is four people. You know, I mean, we've scaled down, again, our reference points to the point where it's absurd. You know, mass should mean a lot of people. I mean, it's a tragedy, it's a massacre. But these words have lost their meaning because they're putting, you know, I mean, tragedies.
We've talked about that many times on how words have been hijacked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, words are just being hijacked to serve a purpose at this point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we also have to look at who the source is. Like you said, not only is it Ozzy Osbourne, but it's a guy from England, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We know English who think that their country is the most perfect country in the world,
No
one's allowed to have guns.
They're not even citizens. They're still subjects of the crown. They're not even citizens.
Exactly.
They're not even sovereigns. They have no real rights in Britain. They don't have free speech. They don't have free religion. The Queen is the head of the Church of England, which is the head church, you know, deputy being the Archbishop of Canterbury. You know, so that between the two of them, you know, they kind of run the country, even though there's a parliament.
Correct.
But it ultimately
Correct.
Comes
and,
down
and
to the Queen, who's head of both church and state.
And that's why I say, yeah, I mean, take what he says with a grain of salt. When it comes, anyone from England who talks about guns just needs to shut up, in my opinion.
Yeah, we'll talk about their knife murders.
let's talk about a couple serious things here.
Okay.
So the spineless GOP, the Grand
Geldings.
Old Party, Republican.
Gelding Old Party. Yeah, the Geldings. Yeah.
Yeah, the Geldings. So instead of waiting until they take over the House and the Senate in November, they decided today that they were going to file articles of impeachment against President Biden. Or,
of course, because they won't go anywhere.
President
yeah, that's
Biden.
How they're doing it. They won't do it after they can. They're doing it now.
No,
see, we did it.
Because they refuse to do anything when they are in charge, and they only do things symbolically now because they know it's going to get shot down in flames.
Mm-hmm. I was going to laugh at
it.
Well,
it's embarrassing.
You know, you've still got a situation, and we've explained this before, but the reality exists that there are 48 Democrat senators and 50 Republican senators, yet the Republicans have decided that they're in the minority and have given power to the Democrats.
Right.
Now, I know the independents and I know the caucus rule and all kinds of things, but the Republicans put up with it. You know, when it came to the student loans, which we call, graduate student welfare, you know, not once has anybody talked about reinstating as soon as they can. They complain, but they don't change. You know, this has been our theme the whole time. This is why we have a show. This is why we have a citizen legislature, because they complain, but they refuse to change anything. And they could. Those
Correct.
Loans could be reinstated just like the Keystone Pipeline could be reinstated. Anything that an executive does, another executive can reverse or Congress can reverse. But they don't.
Yep. No, they refuse to. And it's just so frustrating. And then the voters buy it every single time. They're, mm-hmm. Next week we'll hear everyone on Fox News, everyone on every conservative talk radio show complaining mm-hmm. because this bill failed and why it failed and it shouldn't have failed. Well, it failed because once again, their timing sucks and they mm-hmm. refuse to do anything when they should be doing something. And mm-hmm. so, it's waste of taxpayer money to file articles of impeachment at this time.
Well, you're in the minority at this point. There is no point. Yeah. It's just like when they overturned Obamacare and Obama vetoed it. Give me a break.
Yeah.
But here's the real problem, though, is that the Republicans have actually held the House since 2018, but they let the Democrats overturn Republican House victories in California, I think 7 of them. So the Republicans are actually up by 7, but once again, they refuse to take charge, refuse to stand up for themselves, refuse to even follow the law because they won, and yet they give the power to the Democrats. So why would anybody trust them to do anything different after the November elections? There's no reason to.
Correct.
They will find a way not to fix things because they're geldings.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important to support these candidates from out of state, like up in Connecticut and Massachusetts, mm-hmm. The ones that ousted the swamp and now are being called extreme MAGAs. which I want to go into next. Earlier this week, President Biden came up
with
something called resident.
You said resident? That's actually
resident.
True. Resident Biden.
It is.
He's the resident of the White House. He's certainly not president, but resident Biden. That's a. Did you make that up? Maybe I've heard that before. I think that's great, though. So tell me about the resident.
So resident Biden decided to start labeling anyone who supports Donald Trump as extremists. Mm-hmm. He's going to go on TV tomorrow night, and mm-hmm. He's already set it up. He's claiming it's going to be about inflation and all this other garbage. But what it's going to come out to?
He's going to increase it.
Tomorrow night he's going to come out, and mm-hmm. without actually saying it, he's going to basically be saying that anyone who supports Donald Trump or has a MAGA hat or anything like that is a terrorist.
That's like having a red sash in the movie Tombstone, right? That's the kind of thing if you're the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Kind of shot on sight. Well, think about this. This is the Marxian dialectic at work. This is the perfect example of Orwell, where the terrorist Marxist gulag supporting, inflators, takers of our energy, our housing, our mobility, our freedom, our taxes, and everything else, and giving it to their own special interests. That's Marxism. That's class elitism. That's globalist everything. Is the one who's going to say the people that are for independence, freedom, low cost energy, a secure border, a strong military, and a good foreign policy are somehow the terrorists. That's Marxian dialectic. That is the perfect example of Orwellian doublespeak. It doesn't get better than this. So, who's going to say that except us, a few other folks, you're not going to hear it on Fox News. You may hear it on One American News and Newsmax, maybe, but I have a little faith in Dan Ball. He's kind of like my new favorite as far as newscasters go. But quite frankly, that's what this is. That's exactly what it is. And it's not going to be called out. How can you be labeled a terrorist when you're for lower cost energy, freedom, and all the things I just went through? So the real enemy,
because,
the terrorists, are those that want
freedom. Because you are not open. You are closed-minded, and mm-hmm. you are provoking violence by wanting that. Mm. And that's what
so
he's saying right now.
The people that want
us
all shot in gulags, the people that are labeling us terrorists, we're the ones promoting violence. Interesting.
Yeah. We are. Because it was Donald Trump and his people who burned down the city of Minneapolis. It was Donald Trump and his people who hijacked and took over the city of Seattle's government. It was Donald Trump and his people who mm-hmm. burned billions of dollars of personal property, mm-hmm. All in the name of BLM and Antifa.
Those are really Trump people.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was, because we are the only one who promote violence.
Yeah, by stopping wars, bringing troops home, ending Afghanistan, you know, in a proper way, and all the other things that Trump advocated. It's really incredible. Yeah, I think he's the only president that didn't start a war somewhere.
Yep, correct. He's the last one who's never started a war. I mean, he did bomb some countries, but he never started a new war. The first president to not do that.
He killed a couple of really bad people. He didn't send a whole army in to rebuild the nation after it. You know, he took them out and went home. Now, you can question his actions, and I'm not sure of all the details. I mean, it's too late now. They're gone. So, you know, but even so, compared to some of the things that's going on now, I mean, the Brandon insurrection is giving Iran a nuclear bomb. It's always been the policy. It's been Obama's policy. That whole thing with Iran was to give them the bomb so they could dominate the area and potentially nuke Israel. That's why they're giving them the bomb.
Correct.
Let's be blunt. You know, this whole two-state solution.
I mean,
they say,
right,
we're violent, but that's why they're doing it. Why else would you give Iran a bomb? If not to nuke people that you can't stand. Marxists hate Jews. I don't know why, but they do. That's obvious.
I never figured that part out either, because there are so many Jewish people that were in Russia, especially during World War II.
Yeah, a lot of them end up in Israel too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Russian Jews in Israel. I don't know what the percentage is, but it's pretty large. You look at the Jewish population that makes up Israel. It's part Arabic, it's part Russian, it's part other places, Eastern European especially. I mean, any of the Holocaust victim countries, large percentage of Jews that survived went to Israel. American Jews went to Israel. You know, there's and come and go, actually, move back and forth. So it'd be interesting to look at it, but there is a large Jewish Russian contingent, because Russians have persecuted Jews, you know, way back to, you know, the pogroms, Fiddler on the Roof days, you know, I don't know, it goes back hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years, I don't know. But it's a long history of persecution in Russia.
Yeah, it really, I mean, it's just the whole world right now, just, I mean, I talk to people all the time about this. I'm definitely living an alternate reality from where we were 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, the world's not crazy. Yeah, it's just certain parts of it are. The parts that are crazy are the globalists that think they can run everything. The only thing that saves us is they're not as competent as they think they are. They can't control everything. Remember Princess Leia in Star Wars? The tighter your grip, the more countries or planets will slip through your fingers. And that's exactly what's happening. There's a reason we're growing. Our audience is growing in Canada, Australia, and the UK. Because they're all under fascism right now. They want to learn how to write their own laws. You know, there's some amazing things happening.
Of
so the resistance is growing.
You know, but the biggest problem that you run into, and it's the same thing over and over again, is this made-up inflation. Because what made-up inflation does is it takes the focus off of what government is doing. I know you probably will disagree with this statement, but it really does take your focus off of what the government is doing, and it puts more focus on how do I put food on the table, how do I pay my bills, and it, you know, and as long as you don't overflood that person will keep fighting to, you know, to stay above water. But if that person starts drowning and loses their house or whatever, that's when the uproar starts happening. So there's a fine line that the federal government will do to keep you down, to keep you knocked down, more of a psyops type of war than anything else. But, you know, and inflation you could say is part of a psyops war, even though it does affect you physically. But it really affects you more mentally, and it really keeps you squeezed down. And I've said this before on air, Donald Trump and President Putin are the only two people left that are on the front line of stopping the One World Order from becoming a reality. Because they need Russia.
There's a couple more. The president of Hungary is very big on this. The president of Brazil, although to a very lesser extent, it's a smaller country. President of El Salvador. There are certain world leaders that have stepped up, and you'll see them. I don't know them. In fact, that'd be a fascinating study if anybody wants to sort of go around the world and talk about the really independent leaders. You know, at one point, Poland was with Lech Walesa. At one point, Pope John Paul was a major leader. Gorka. Sebastian Gorka was talking about this yesterday. Margaret Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, and I guess he's now Saint John Paul, you know, really ended the Cold War. But I think they forgot Lech Walesa, you know, the head of the Solidarność, you know, Solidarity, the Polish dock workers union that spread to a revolution. So these things can't change. You can't fight the globalists. You can't do this. But inflation, you mentioned, this is actually a really interesting point about the psychology of inflation. inflation really is the stealing of your wealth and the transfer of that wealth to government. The government prints more money, which makes your money worth less. So they have more money. They can. I'm not sure exactly how the mechanism works, but the currency is devalued with inflation. And they figured out, it used to be 3%, but it's now at 2%, where their ideal is 2% inflation. And they somehow think that's a good thing to take 2% of your money. Well, that's irrational. We did a whole show on why deflation is the way out of all our problems. You deflate the currency. You make the dollars more valuable. You increase the purchasing power. You increase the value of savings. You lower the prices, and everybody in this country benefits. That's a good thing. So the real psyop is convincing people that deflation is bad because somehow if we lower prices, people won't buy things because they're waiting for even lower prices. Well, that's a bunch of BS. I read that in several different articles. That's propaganda. That's nonsense. So if people get it in their heads that we really want deflation or at least zero inflation, and the way to do that is with our constitutional amendment to end the power of Congress to borrow money. So we already have a cure for inflation, a permanent cure for inflation. If they can't borrow money, they can't spend beyond their means. They can't print money to cover their added expenses, and they won't be able to create inflation because inflation is always government created. So you want to talk about a PSYOP? We need to get that message out there that we can stop inflation by stopping Congress from borrowing money forever, well, unless the Constitution's amended again. But that's how you do it. But there is no
level of
inflation.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it definitely is. I mean,
yeah.
But it's just like saying that, you know, putting a constitutional amendment in for a balanced budget, that's all fine and dandy, but then there's that little caveat in there that says, except during times of war.
Right, there's a difference. No, I don't have that exception. There is no exception in my amendment. Yep.
Do you see over 200 Republicans or Democrats who have been in power for years and years passing a bill that doesn't give them an out?
Not unless the states demand it. So how I think this is going to work, and I've been thinking about this, it can't go to the Congress because they're never going to ratify. They can't even pass vaccine product liability. Even our own congressman here, Matt Gaetz, who has had this since March of 21, you know, who doesn't take PAC money, and he still hasn't put this bill into Congress to put vaccine product liability on. Okay, so it's impossible to get that. You're not going to get this out of Congress. It's got to come from the
people. Okay, wait,
wait,
stop 1 second. Stop 1 second.
Right.
Matt Gaetz has his own PAC. Which
oh, he does?
Do donate to. Yeah, and his sister is the one who controls it.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's good to know. Can you report on that next week, please?
Yeah, it's just the Friends of Matt Gaetz. It's very public stuff.
Okay,
and
no,
then,
but let's get the details. Yeah. How much money? Where is it coming from? Is it, in fact, a PAC that's not calling itself a PAC? So if he's not taking money from Big Pharma, is Big Pharma donating to his PAC? That's what I want to know. We'll find out.
Well, we know that big. Well, we know the medical marijuana field is from
okay.
its,
well, but
from
they
its
don't bother
down
me.
To Bahamas.
Yeah, I don't care about the potheads. You know, they can do that. In fact, I want to take Action Radio to the Bahamas. I got plans for cruises for us, so we're gonna have some fun, especially when the mask mandates, get out of the way and we get some major sponsors here.
Well, as long as
here.
No underage prostitutes on board, we're okay.
Why would you even suggest such a thing? We are pure and above board here at Action Radio. We don't even think thoughts like that. We are the epitome of legality and proper behavior, Bill. But anyway.
I'll just referencing the sticky situation that our congressman's in right now.
Well, that's his situation, but I don't believe it unless there's evidence coming forward, because the Democrats always accuse Republicans of sex scandals while the Democrats do them. you look at the Wiener Brigade. You know, most of the sex scandals, the accusations, Roy Moore, they accused, didn't do it. Donald Trump, they accused, didn't do it. Jim Jordan, Matt Gaetz, they've all been accused of sex scandals. Okay. Bring forward the evidence, bring forward the people after the election. See, these things all die with the election. This is how you know they're false. So we actually have a bill. It's funny you should mention that. I wrote a bill a while back that anybody that brings a sex scandal within 3 months of an election has to file police charges within 3 months after the election. Or that's just a false accusation.
Well, I mean, if you're going to accuse someone, why are you not filing charges immediately?
Exactly. Well, maybe we should modify the bill. I haven't looked at it for a while,
you need to modify that bill. I mean, don't make false accusations. If you are positive that that happened, file a police report, then make the charges public.
Well, you know what? Let's take a look. Well, we only have 5 minutes. Let's not. Let's we'll put that up.
Okay, so there's two things I need to talk about real quickly.
Go for it.
We have some good news, more good news coming out of Florida, which just seems like it's happening every single day. So Congressional District 13, which was Charlie Crist's seat, obviously he gave it up. He's running for governor. He's going to lose for governor. So we have Republican Anna Paulina Luna and Democrat Eric. I can't read my writing now. Lynn, possibly Lynn, Lennon. It doesn't matter.
Lennon.
In this race, there's 34,000 more registered Republican voters than Democrats.
Hmm. Well, until Election Day.
So, well, the thing
that
is,
can change.
That, remember, Florida, well, the whole country just went through redistricting.
Right.
So with these, so this is the two races we're about to talk about are two races we can thank Ron DeSantis for his redistricting map. Because he's about to flip two seats.
Oh, good.
Him in his redistricting map. This is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is Congressional District 7, which Democrats Stephanie Murphy has decided not to run again. She's been a stronghold for a long time in that seat. But we talked about this race last week. This is the race that Corey Mills beat Anthony Sabatini in.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going up against Democrat Karen Green. What I found interesting about this specific race is, first of all, the seat, Stephanie Murphy has had this seat for a long time, far leftist. But now looking at who came out to vote in the primary, 73,000 Republican voters came out to vote, while only 51,000 came out to vote for the Democrats.
So
that's 22,000 difference right there in who voted in the primary.
Mm-hmm. And primaries don't get the amount of attention the general does.
Correct. So with that being said, because we noticed here in Escambia County, it was down from 2020, and I think why it was down a little bit this time was because Ron DeSantis didn't have a running mate. I mean, didn't have a running opponent, so he wasn't on the ballot.
Well, it's also non-presidential too. The midterms are always midterm years are always lower than the presidential years.
Yeah, but we have a governor race that is very hot right now.
Chris is
the biggest talking point in the country right now. DeSantis against Chris, it is the biggest talking point because if Chris cannot dethrone DeSantis, in the Democrats' eyes. It's a gateway to DeSantis running for president.
Well, he's going to run for president anyway.
But he will lose some momentum if he can't win his home state.
He's going to win it. Please.
I know. You're
propaganda.
Missing the point of what I'm trying to say here again.
That's propaganda.
The point I'm trying to say is that the Democrats are focusing all their energy onto this specific race to stop the momentum that DeSantis has.
Well, there's another reason, too.
So there's a big focus from
they don't
all
want
over
DeSantis.
The country on this race.
Yeah, but they don't want DeSantis being Trump's running mate. So if DeSantis loses, he could easily, come back as Trump's running mate. I don't think he's going to lose, and I don't think he's going to be his running mate. I think DeSantis is going to run on his own in 2028. I think Trump's going to run 2024.
So there's been some rumors lately about what's been happening here, and you got to take it for what it's worth, but coming out of the Trump camp, they've been a little bit upset with Ron DeSantis lately because he is stealing some of Trump's speaking engagements. Because Ron DeSantis now is starting to be more in demand than President Trump.
Well, that's
and we're
out
seeing
of
that. Well, we're seeing that with DeSantis going to Pennsylvania. He's gone to Arizona. He's going to different parts of the country right now as a governor to support other governors in their race.
Well, that's good.
Trump's
not in this election. He's not going to be in it for 2 years. Now, ideally, did you hear what he talked about demanding to be reinstated because of the FBI, suppressing of election information with the Biden laptop? That was kind of interesting. That kind of glossed over real quickly.
Yeah, I heard about it, and, I don't know what the grounds are for him just because if everyone who got raided by the FBI can make a statement like that, I mean, you need a little bit more grounds on that. And I do want to dig into that at some point because some people are saying, oh, this is a January 6th witch hunt. I don't think this is a witch hunt for January 6th findings. What I think this is they raided his house to find out what he has on them, mainly the Hunter Biden laptop.
Well, they raided his house for the same reason they wanted his tax returns. They want to make a crime. They want to make a crime out of something. You know, it's the old Inquisition. We know you're guilty. We just have to, you know, find the crime that fits, you know, and find the evidence that fits the crime that we're going to charge you of. You know, and that's
okay,
directly.
I'm not even saying that. I'm saying that they're trying to find the dirt that Donald Trump has on them.
Well, I know what you're saying, but I think that's part of it.
When he gets back in charge, he's going to have this evidence and start charging people and putting them in jail.
But there's plenty of evidence these people have displayed themselves. I mean, Merrick Garland is running the FBI, Justice, KGB like a secret police force. He's basically running it like a Marxist secret police force. So there's plenty of evidence of crime. Chris Wray, head of the FBI, KGB, there's plenty of evidence just from his own actions and lack of actions. And the fact that the spokespeople from the FBI, KGB, can't even say whether they're terrorists, whether they're part of a coup or not, whether they were there January 6th. They refuse to answer the question. Well, if you can't tell me whether you're a treasonous coup leader or not, then you don't deserve to be in a government position. So the evidence is all there. There's more than enough evidence that these people have already offered themselves. Trump doesn't have to have dirt on them. All the Congress has to do is hold hearings, and when they don't answer, put them in jail for contempt.
Correct.
You know, and investigate. And then when the minions come forward, when the John Dean of the Democrats comes forward. And tells all the story, you know, whatever that story is, you know, that's what we're going to find out. But it's up to the geldings to actually investigate stuff. And that's where actually Gates,
which we know
he's
won't
really
happen.
Good at, you know, well, but that's the problem. See, the thing is they've showed no evidence. If the geldings had a daily talking point saying, here's your election fraud detail for today. If they were at the border handing out cards saying, don't get too comfortable, you're not staying. You know, I mean, little things like that. If they had a daily press conference saying, here's what the Marxist coup did today that's illegal. You know, I mean, there's so many things that they could do that would actually show what they're going to do. They could have legislation. They publish the legislation that they're going to, you know, put forward after the election. Let's hear what they're going to do. They've offered absolutely no solutions. They're not talking about reinstating the loans. No, they're not saying, well, we can't wait to put the Keystone Pipeline back. You know, they're not saying that we're going to get out of Ukraine. You know, there's all these things that they're not saying. And I'll say the biggest person who's not saying anything is Mike Pence is still not saying that he was upset that his vice presidency was stolen, which is how I know he was in on the coup. You know, I mean,
correct.
Conspicuous by his absence. So where are the battleground states? Where are the geldings telling the battleground state legislatures, why aren't you putting forward your Trump electors? Why aren't you disqualifying your Brandon electors? Why are we still engaged in this nonsense? And why did you do that back in January 6th when you should have, or before January 6th? So that's what I'd be saying. If the geldings really were a decent party, they'd be putting pressure on all those state legislatures saying, you people better. You know, you're way late. You're like 2 years late now. They should have done it before January 6th and said those Brandon electors do not count. State legislatures have the Constitution behind them. The state legislatures are supreme in this situation. The governors and secretaries of state are subordinate. The Trump electors from the state legislatures win. Those are the ones that have to be taken. And if they want to argue about it in Congress, that's a different story. But they didn't. They suppressed it. That's why they put the Trump people up top so they could go underneath the Capitol and do the real coup, which is denying the Trump electors from the state legislatures of the battleground states. That is the coup. And yet Mike Pence.
Correct.
You know he's in on it, but he's never accused of not complaining about it, which is kind of interesting. So why aren't you complaining about your vice presidency being stolen? That's an interesting question.
Wendy should be complaining right now because we're going over on her time.
Wendy's not here
today.
Wendy's out today, so you got time. So don't worry, she's not here. Yeah,
I don't have time today. I got to go earn my dollar for today, so I do have to get going.
Well, that's fine. That's different.
If
you just want to leave, I mean, don't blame it on Wendy. You just want to leave. I understand.
Well, okay, so I'm starting to get a little paranoid because back during the Obama days, my phone used to click a lot. And
is it clicking
and
again?
Today, when I called you, my phone has been clicking this entire time.
Well, let's welcome the members of the FBI KGB to the show. If you want to call in,
exactly.
Like everybody else does, 215-383-3832. We also have live chat. And if you're calling in from out of the country, if you're a foreign secret intelligence operation, then you can just use our regular Skype line. It's on your broadcast page. We'll be glad to have you on the show. Is it still clicking?
Actually, you know what? It stopped.
Oh, so there you... Now that's
seriously,
funny.
It stopped.
That's hysterical. You cowards. Well, I mean,
they
I
are. They really
to...
are.
I fully expect to be on the news someday, you know, and I can't, I won't say I can't wait for my my raid, but it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen, you know, and I'll just walk out there
well,
in my,
they
back
came
again?
Back on there.
Oh,
okay,
so,
the,
oh, so, you know, so they shut down and they said, hey, what do we do? He doesn't want us listening again. He's already accused us of being here, you know, for the KGB agent that's teaching the FBI how to do it properly. Yeah. So we know. We all know. Everybody knows.
Yeah.
We know.
Well, they came, Obama came out and admitted it.
What's that?
Obama came out and admitted it and laughed about it.
That what?
That they were listening in on every single conversation in America.
Oh, I believe it. Well, that's what the Patriot Act's for. It's to get rid of the Patriots.
Exactly.
Can I get in on
the United States? Yeah. And we're just following orders.
So. Well, that was kind of weird. I just heard a
Oh, no, Pianchi's here, too. I made Pianchi sound
Oh, Pianchi,
so Pianchi,
okay.
You got a few seconds,
right,
and Bill has to earn his dollar.
Well, I am going to go, so Pianchi.
For clicking? Is there
Pianchi
any
is,
more room for clicking?
Bring on the clicking.
Okay, Bill, we'll see you next week.
Okay.
I don't have a clicking track. I got a news track. I got a bunch of sound effects here. In fact, let's play this encouraging thing for all the secret police that are listening right now. This is for you.
Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
Yeah, I made that before the 2020 election. So something, Pianchi, I'm just going to hold you up just for a second here. I want to get this article out here very fast. The Insider and a bunch of other publications, but this is from The Insider, are trying to change the narrative once again that Trump didn't win the election, even though he's called for reinstatement because of what the FBI did, which is quite fascinating. So this is a typical headline. Trump demands reinstatement as, quote, rightful president, which he is, or an election or a new election immediately. Some Republicans seek distance from him. So they qualify rightful, you know, and then they say, and then they always have the qualifier, well, Republicans seek distance from him, implying he's not a Republican. This is former President Donald Trump demanded reinstatement as president or a new election immediately after news that Facebook temporarily limited a controversial story about Hunter Biden's laptop in users' news feeds before the 2020 election. Well, that's the controversy itself. Facebook is censoring. Then it says Trump was responding to Facebook, now Meta, CEO Mark Zuckerberg's comments on Joe Rogan's podcast that a New York Post story about the laptop fit the pattern of polarizing content, including Russian propaganda that the FBI had warned the company about. Well, so the big problem here is that the FBI is going to private companies and telling them what to publish and what not to publish. That's government secret police censorship, anti-First Amendment. That's the problem. Not that Trump's demanding reinstatement, but that Facebook limited the story based on a suggestion or a hint by the FBI, which had no business going to Facebook in the first place. Good morning, Pianchi.
Good morning, Greg.
Yeah, hi. We got a shorter show today because I'm going to be on with Emerald Robinson in about an hour and 20 minutes. So we're going to shut down in about 50 minutes from now. And so we're going to have Lindsay Horton at the top of the hour. We'll talk wellness. And then we have an abbreviated show, and then I get to set up my room here for Zoom. So I can turn on the lights and, you know, move a couple of things around, and away we go. But this is our first big national show, so I'm really excited about that.
That's good. Have on your best bow tie.
I don't wear ties. Ties are a sign of slavery. Men should not wear ties. Free men should never wear a tie. It's like that symbolic rope around your neck. I am sorry. I am not here to have a rope around my neck. I never wear ties. I don't care how famous or big this show gets. I'm not wearing a tie. I'm just not. Maybe if I meet Trump, I might consider it. But even then, I'm going to think about it. Give me a polo shirt and a sport jacket.
Yeah.
I'll be just fine.
That's
Give me my Miami Vice jacket. What's that?
That's a good enough reason.
Yeah. And we're ties.
Yeah, your Miami Vice jacket with the music. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, yeah, I love that. I love that show. Yeah, so I'm looking for a Miami Vice jacket. So if anybody has a store that has one, you know, send me a message here live. Just dive it in. I check our local stores around here, but nobody – I'm going to have to, you know, do the Amazon thing and get online. Yeah, I figure Miami Vice jacket, I got these striped polo shirts that I usually wear on interviews. You know, bright colored Florida stuff. And that's it. I don't need a tie. Yeah, I'll be fine. Can't wait. Let's bring on the TV interviews.
Let's go.
It's going to be fun. But a big audience, you know, especially this is so important. It's Lindell TV, and it's on frankspeech.com. And so what's so critical about that is, I mean, Steve Bannon's there. I mean, I'm being interviewed by Emerald Robinson and a bunch of folks, you know, really big name America First freedom fighters are going to hear for the first time about our citizen legislature, about a bill that puts, you know, vaccine liability where it belongs on big pharma. And so this is going to be news to a lot of people. So I am curious as hell to hear what happens. I think it's going to be fascinating. And so we'll see. It's on 11 Central, so that'd be 12 Eastern, on frankspeech.com. So I should be live there. I'm going to watch it. Then I'm going to go to the gym and go, oh, boy, I need to work out the adrenaline. But we'll see. I only get 8 minutes, but, you know, 8 minutes can change the world, depending on what you do with it.
Well,
so we'll see.
You mentioned about the ballots, separation of ballots, and if you have time, if they allow it, and the bill on eliminating the borrowing of money, because this was that's the root of a lot of problems right there.
Yeah. What I'm hoping to do, quite honestly, and it's a good point. I mean, these bills are critical. What I'm hoping to do is probably, first of all, it's her interview. So she gets to ask me whatever she wants. If I get a chance to come up with other bills, yeah, I'll talk about that. I'd rather actually do a bunch of interviews over time, highlighting one bill per interview. If you have 8 minutes, you know, the introduction of a bill, I mean, these things take a little bit of time to describe. And the process of how we do it and the website of how anybody can file a bill, I'm going to ask her if she wants to file a bill. You know, I'm finding that these news folks, you give them an opportunity to engage in citizen legislation, they jump at it. And so that's part of my strategy, is to get them actually involved and put their name on bills. I think, you know, people that are in media that actually write legislation themselves are much more likely to talk about us. And the more people that write bills, the better.
Yeah,
the more they don't have my name on it. Because I've written enough bills, and I don't need to write any more.
Yeah.
Well, at least not too many.
Like these student loans.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if Joe Biden wanted to do something, the Republicans wanted to do something, you would remove the limitation of bankruptcy off of student loans. That way everybody can benefit.
Let's see that. So removal. Oh, because if you declare bankruptcy, you don't have to pay your student loan, right?
Right, right. And student loans are exempt from bankruptcy. You can't use them in a bankruptcy case. Student loans, guess what else? Alimony. Huh?
So why would you want to take that away? If they can't use a student loan in the bankruptcy, it still has to be paid back. That's a good thing.
If you go into court, if you go into bankruptcy court, you cannot bankrupt a student loan.
Okay, maybe I'm missing something here. So you're saying that you cannot be declared bankrupt if you have student loans?
You can't declare bankruptcy on a student loan.
Okay, so you have to declare bankruptcy.
Then
on something
that
else.
Way, everybody, rather than the way he's doing now, trying to target a few people for votes, that
right.
way everybody, all Americans, could that find themselves in financial difficulty where they have to file for bankruptcy, well,
right.
they can include the student loan also. That's what the Constitution says. It's constitutional, right?
Well, it should be. I mean, bankruptcy should account for all your debts. I mean, that's the whole point of bankruptcy.
But you can't include student loans, and you can't include alimony, I believe it is. And there's some things that you can't. Well, let's just stick with student loans. You can't file bankruptcy on student loans. If that was the case, people would have done it a long time ago.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Well, that'd be another good bill. But I want to include in that bill a reinstatement of all student loans. See, that's the one thing the Geldings haven't talked about. They should be talking about the reinstatement. They should be talking, like they talk about bringing the Keystone Pipeline back, they should be talking about bringing the loans back. First of all, Brandon can't unilaterally dismiss those loans. He can't do it. He has no power. And that's what I was talking to Jonathan about this Monday. It's like, how is this going to happen? What are the mechanics of this? How are people going to physically remove these loans? Legally, it can't be done.
Well, he's done a lot of things. Initiated is nothing more than a big talk that he doesn't have the authority to do.
Yeah.
And people don't believe that. Oh, he's the president. You got when you have that type of machine running of ignorance is a machine that runs and runs. It's perpetual. It don't even need any energy source. But when you have that, they take advantage of it as much as they possibly can.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't.
It's just like
I don't know why they don't. You know, why don't the geldings say
it's
something?
Like,
you know, go ahead.
I don't know. You know, Craig, I was going to ask you, I listened to you in your conversation. You know, you can elect 100 Republicans in the Senate and 430 Democrats. Well, if they don't legislate, if they don't govern, then what's the use?
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is the whole purpose of Action Radio. See, I don't care who's in office. I don't care who the majority party is. Whoever is there is going to get our citizen legislation and hopefully enough pressure. I'd love to make the parties irrelevant so that, because now we're much too concerned with party and personality. And people elect people they think are going to do the right thing, but they don't, because Congress is, the party system is fundamentally opposed to having any input from American citizens. The only input that these people in a party receive, of course, everybody's in a party, the only input they receive is from their party. Even the independent, the two independents, Senator King and Senator Sanders, Bernie Sanders, and I've forgotten King's first name, Alfred or something King, one from Maine, one from Vermont, you know, they're independent by registration, but they still, quote, caucus. In other words, they talk to the Democrats, so they're counted as Democrats, even though they're independents. You know, so everybody's in a party.
Well,
everybody's in a party, and the party rules. The party tells you how to vote. The party tells you what to do. The party takes in fact, the party should be declared unconstitutional because it takes away our representation. We're not actually being represented anymore. The people, once they get to Congress, they represent the party. The party tells them what to do.
Well, you're right about that. But see, the key thing that you said, that you've taken away the representation. The battle cry should be that you are representing us because we have given you instructions on how we want to be governed. And
exactly.
That never comes. It never comes. And that gets back to that ignorance machine that's running, that ignorance clock.
Well, think about this, too. If you look at our mission statement, we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. And the second part is, and we have the power of the juries.
That's better than what's going on now.
Yeah. And the second part, which we'll get to in a bit, but the second part is, I forget it myself. I'm not good at memorizing. But it says, we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. And so it all comes back to the people.
Absolutely. I mean, anything is better than what it is. The reason why we elected you is this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you tell them why we are – this is why we're going to put you up as a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
If you're elected, this is what we expect.
Yeah, but you've got to get past the party. You've got to have the people directly to the media, then to the government. See, people say, well, you haven't passed any bills, have you? And I say, well, have you shared any? No. Well, then we're not going to pass any until you share them. And this goes for everybody. You got to share the bills. But they have to be shared with media. Media reports on them. In fact, this is exactly what I was hoping would happen. That now we're at a point where national media is looking at us and saying, you guys have got something kind of interesting going on here. I want to know more about it. And Emerald Robinson, who's going to interview me, you know, in a little bit today, is particularly interested in vaccine product liability. Why don't we have it? You know, your local donut shop has product liability and Big Pharma doesn't. What does that tell you? The emergency declaration. I'm going to pull this up now. This is. I looked this up last night because it was quite fascinating. You look at the reason we have a declaration of emergency is not because Congress passed the law, is not because Trump did an executive order back in 2020. The reason we have a declaration of emergency is right here. It's published in Federal Register, Volume 85, Number 52, Tuesday, March 17th, 2020. Notices. We have a declaration of emergency because of a notice put in by the Department of Health and Human Services Secretary, declaration under the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, that's the PREP Act, for medical countermeasures against COVID-19. Notice of declaration. The Secretary is issuing this declaration pursuant to provide liability immunity for activities related to medical countermeasures against COVID-19. So the sole reason for a declaration of emergency, the sole reason, is right there in the first paragraph, to provide liability immunity for activities related to medical countermeasures against COVID-19. So there wasn't an emergency of COVID-19. There was an emergency of liability. It's right here, Federal Register, Volume 85,
Greg,
Number 52. What?
You are talking way over the head of probably 75% of the population.
Not on this show. At least I hope not.
You should describe your bill as the ability to sue. The ability to sue pharmaceuticals.
Yep.
When their medicine causes you harm.
That's actually a good point. That's a really good point, because I can get lost in the language, because once you start writing these things, it's harder to see. Well, and that's effectively what we do. The bill does three things. It gets rid of the vaccine compensation program, so the big pharma has to pay. It gets rid of the declaration of emergency, and it changes the two places in law where it says vaccine manufacturers shall not be liable and says vaccine manufacturers shall be fully liable. That's it. But you're making a really excellent point
so that
they can be sued for damages. That's what I need
right.
to say.
So that they can be sued. You got to include words.
Yep.
Just like newspapers.
No, good point.
Say newspaper.
Right.
Newspapers are written at fourth grade level in reading? Well, then you got to take consideration of who you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
These people don't know what the heck liability means.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's a good point. Yeah. Well, see, I wrote this to pass Congress, and so I have to include certain language in there. I have to use the language that they use as much as, or in a way that still is understandable, but I didn't put in – but the courts know, the trial lawyers will know this. In fact, I've been trying to get the trial lawyers interested in this bill. Maybe I'll send them my interview with Emerald Robinson today. I'll try them again. That's, hey, guys, there's billions at stake here if you guys support this bill. You got to go for the motivations. What motivates people is they'll get damages. They'll get money. They'll make Big Pharma pay for deaths and injuries. So the people, they have a chance to sue. The trial lawyers, they're going to make billions in contingency fees. Because if Big Pharma
Another
is fully
thing.
Liable... So, yeah.
You got to include everybody in on these reliefs. Just because a person that is so-called, quote-unquote, above $250,000 or $125,000, they have feelings also. And they work very, very hard for what they want. So do they not have the – should they not be receive benefits? So just like this student loan, if you're going to give this group the ability to alleviate themselves, you should give everyone the ability to alleviate themselves. You don't know
what's required.
The reason.
That's required by the 14th Amendment, the equal protection of laws. You cannot give special rights. You cannot give money to one group and not give it to everybody. That violates general welfare. That violates equal protection. So this bill is unconstitutional, but that's the long way. The simple thing is to just reinstate the loans. So, okay, that was a mistake. That was illegal. That could not have been done. And even if it were legal, Trump or whoever the GOP president is can still reinstate them. Congress can reinstate them. Congress can say, that was a mistake. We're reinstating your loans. That should never have been done. Even if it were legal
just
for
like you
a president
give,
to do it, you can still reinstate them.
Just like they got this move to give blacks reparations for – look at what ethnic group has not have evils portrayed upon them. Let's give them all reparations.
What you could do is give a tax break. Yeah, but you can't give reparations to the people that need it because they're dead. They've gone. They've passed on. They're in heaven.
Reparation.
Yeah.
You can call a tax break a reparation. You can call a tax break 4th of July sale. It's still the same thing. People want money.
You can call it freedom. Yeah, people want free money. They want what they really want, unfortunately, is other people's money. And the desire, the love of other people, it's not just the love of money. It's really the love of other people's money is really the root of all evil. And the Marxists prey on that. The reason democracy is self-destruct is because people realize, and I've forgotten who said it, but somebody said that once the people realize they can vote themselves other people's money, the society collapses. And that's where we are now. People want politicians to give them other people's money. That's what the student loan thing's all about. They don't want to pay it off. They want other people to pay it off.
Yeah.
And this is why democracies never succeed. This
people,
is why republics. Yeah. Yeah.
Other people are really disturbed. So, like I said, you got to make it possible for the other people to be able to get rid of their loans also. And like I said before, when it comes to bankruptcy, these loans can be included with everybody, not just a particular class. Like the governor in California want to give blacks, label blacks as a particular class, hoping that would help them in their, those that want it, that is, in their reparations efforts.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's crazy.
Let's give the Italians those things. Let's put the Italians in that same class. Let's put the Armenians, the Acadians in that same class.
Yeah.
They was harmed. Their language was taken from them.
Mm-hmm.
They was kicked and spit on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you could say these days that conservatives deserve reparations because there's ideological discrimination. There's ideological persecution. You know, the whole thing about what Bill was talking about.
Black should be put in a special class, and hate and actions can be their call too. Black conservatives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got it for gays, right? You got it for Asians, right? So black conservatives. When black conservatives are ridiculed, attacked, denigrated, spit upon, that there should be considered a federal hate crime.
Well, see, you could, but I don't like the whole idea of hate crimes because hate crimes are so subjective. They're used as political weapons. The better thing to do is to include in the Civil Rights Act, you know, they say immutable characteristics. In other words, things you're born with, like your skin color. But I think that given the fact that government can discriminate on the basis of religion against Christians, on the basis of color against white people, on the basis of ideology against conservatives, patriots, MAGA supporters, independents, you know, people that love freedom. I mean, governments hate freedom, but now they're actually persecuting people that love freedom. And so ideology should be a civil rights protected, you know, you are as much of what you think as what your skin color is, maybe even more. What you
do
think,
they not have Asian? We now have an Asian hate crime bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you give somebody something, you pay all holy hell taking it back.
Yeah.
So
I know that.
You don't get what you
well,
do.
It's gonna be hard to take
you give
back.
It to more people.
Well, how do you prove somebody? How do you prove somebody hates? How do you prove hatred?
I don't know how they prove it, Greg.
If you have an Asian hate bill, right? You have an Asian hate bill. Okay, we can't have Asian hate crimes. So how do you prove that somebody of a different race, you know, injured or killed an Asian person simply because they're Asian? How do you prove that?
Bill says they can't.
I know,
why.
But it's a stupid bill. Well, in the same way, if someone's killed by another Asian, how do you know that's not a hate crime?
It might be, but try to take it from them.
No, I know. I didn't say it was easy. Hey, listen.
So what
the hardest fight is going to be taking the ability of Congress to borrow money away. That's going to be – that has to come from the people to the states and from the states to the media and from the media to Congress. That's how that bill's going to go.
Well, I agree with you on that. But once you give a group, an identifiable group, something – you pay holy hell taking it back from. So the
well,
way to
give it in the first place.
That,
yeah, is what?
Well, it's too late.
No, it's not.
They
hey, listen, we gotta correct.
What I'm trying to say.
What's that?
You give it to everybody.
Oh, okay.
You don't give it. You just don't give cake and ice cream to the kids that didn't get their clothes dirty, and you got more kids that did. You give cake and ice cream to all the kids.
Or you don't give it at all, because people should be free to buy their own cake and ice cream. Yeah, I agree with you there. We got Lindsay here.
What about the kids that done like you? What about the kids that perform like you told them to? Well, they won't perform no more because you broke your promise. So
right,
include your promise to all of them.
Right.
Your reward,
but that's why
should
socialism,
be credit to all of them.
Yeah, but that's why socialism failed. That's why the pilgrims almost all died out, because everybody got the same portion whether they worked or not. So the people that didn't work said, I'm going to get fed, so I don't care. The people that did work said, I'm not going to work because I'm feeding all these other people. They're not working. So that's how the pilgrims almost died. Socialism doesn't work. Democracy doesn't work when people vote each other people's income. So the idea is really not to give it in the first place. So we need to reinstate the loans. But the real thing is to make college less expensive. And the way you do that is to get government out of the student loan business. There's no reason for college to be as expensive as it is. Offer viable alternatives. The best thing that employers can do is to have internship programs and training programs for people so they don't have to go to college. If all they're interested in is a job, go right to the job. Let them train you. And offer tax credits and deductions for companies to do that. Lower the demand for college, and I guarantee you the price of college will drop.
I don't understand what you said.
Okay, let me try one more time.
You're talking over my head.
It's okay. I'll get to Lindsay in a second here. It's very simple. If you want to lower the cost of college, you lower the demand for college. See, everybody thinks they have to go to college to get a job. The companies out there are saying, you can only go so far in our company if you don't have a college degree. Well, that's insane, because most people forget everything they learn in college the day after they graduate. They go to a company and they basically start fresh being trained by that job. Well, let's make it official. Let's offer, you know, either tax deductions or credits or something, or just talk to companies about hiring people and training people and, you know, get some loyalty in there. Say, we will train you, but you owe us, you know, 3 years of service or whatever it is. You know, make it like an internship to work kind of thing. And so there are many ways to do this, but if you lower the demand for college.
Let's limit contact sports in elementary school until you get to the 10th grade.
That's a different issue, but I agree with you. Let me play a couple things, and we're going to come right back to Lindsay.
From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. My Pillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's G-R-A-I-T-H, care. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care. Better health through better knowledge and advocacy. What is health? What does it take to stay healthy? We have a longer lifespan than 100 years ago, but is the quality of life any better? 100 years ago, their food was better. They got more exercise. They weren't as fat. They didn't have preservatives, antidepressants, sugar in everything, and they didn't have vaccines. If you talk about alternative health care, people think of crystals, incense, strange candles, crystal balls, Ouija boards, notions, potions, lotions, and total hippies telling you to detox, man. So let's change our system of sick care into wellness. Let's get healthy. Let's lower our stress, stop taking in poisons, eat and drink organic, clean food, and let's have a chat with Chancey Terry, because this is Wine, Weed, and Wellness Wednesday.
And I still have to make a new theme to add on Lindsay Horton and Paige Ward to our wonderful Wild Women of Wellness. Good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm excited. I've got an interview. We have a little bit shorter show today. We can go a little bit past the bottom of the hour, but I just have to move furniture, turn on lights, you know, rearrange the fans.
No,
the prep's done. I mean, we're talking about, see, the beauty of these interviews is that I talk about the stuff I talk about here on the show all the time. So I'm always prepped. I really am. I'm going to read over our vaccine liability bill. And Pianki made a brilliant point that I should really just state clearly. This is so you can sue, you know, big pharma for injuries and deaths. And that really makes
That'll
it clear.
That'll get some attention.
Well, yeah. You know, this is why I have you guys helping me out. You know, I can't think of everything, and I don't even try. The group that we have here is so special and so incredible that, I'm listening. As much as I'm talking, I'm listening. Maybe I should listen.
Right. I did want to add something to what I came in there at the end of. And I worked at UWF for a really long time, about 10 years. And I sat – so a university gets accredited, and every few years or so they have to go through the reaffirmation process, which basically the affirmation team comes in that does the credentialing, and they look over everything to make sure that you're doing everything right and maintaining. So a part of that is outreach programs, and Navy Fed came in, and they wanted to work with UWF on how to create course training for their employees to allow them to get further education within the boundaries of Navy Federal. So what you were saying is literally something Navy Fed's been doing now for a long time, and I think they're pretty successful at it. So I was like, wow, Greg, you really know what you're talking about, because they're doing it.
Yeah, I get lucky sometimes. But a lot of companies do this. But what I'm saying is most companies should do this. And I know a lot of companies. Now, does Navy Federal say that you can't get into management unless you have a four-year degree? Do they have any kind of limitations on that? Or are they much more?
I believe they do. I think you have to have the qualifications.
But what's weird is, I'll tell you a funny story. When I was in the University of Massachusetts, I ran my own business with a friend of mine. We had a sort of lawn mowing, hedge trimming business combined with an airplane washing business, washing and waxing. And so we did more of the landscaping stuff in the beginning of the summer because the grass was greener, and then it burned up. It was New England. And the end of the summer, we built up our airplane business. I made enough money to, I never needed student loans. I mean, I worked full time in school, but I made a good living for a couple of years until the second oil embargo came in and everybody stopped flying. But the point was, I went to the business school and I said, hey guys, I run a business. I made a profit. You know, I was marketing. We did promotional materials. We did contracting. I bought supplies. We did accounting, you know, paid my taxes. You know, I did everything the business does. I said, can I get an independent study and some business credit? And they said, no. So why not? Well, you haven't been to our business school. You haven't taken any classes. You don't know how to run a business. What? Let me start this conversation again. I just ran a successful business, you know, with a friend of mine for the summer.
Right.
You know, and I basically said, no, this is how we do things. So this is the big problem. So college, the problem is that college only recognizes college credit. Business, but the problem is when you get out of college, out of that business school, do you think you can run a business? I doubt it. You know the academics of business, but you don't know the business. You have to learn that in the business that you work in. Right. So what I'm saying is, why don't we skip college for those that can and go directly to a business, and let's make it easier for business to have more training programs and lower the demand for college, unless you want to go. Now, if you want to go study Shakespeare, great, go for it. That's wonderful. that may help you.
Or have a program where you have like a start your small business program where, you know, the person interested sends in the framework and they work with an instructor to get it approved. And if they work one-on-one with that instructor, you know, check in every so often and, you know, explain things and gain knowledge and test them, you know, every 6 months or so to see if they're learning what they need to, and then allow that to go parallel and they have the business and the college. I mean, I think that would be a great idea too.
Yeah. Yeah. All these are good ideas. It'd be interesting if you had a requirement for business school that you had to at least try to start a business as part of your graduation requirement.
Right.
All these things.
Anyway,
yeah.
Okay. On to soul wellness.
Please do.
Today I wanted to talk about the importance of setting your own boundaries as parents. I thought that would be a pretty interesting topic to tackle.
Yeah. I'm curious.
Okay. So, I've been surrounded by parents lately who have kids in, you know, let's say about 8 to 15 year range, and they are going through a lot of emotional battles with these kids. A lot of what I'm noticing is parents aren't setting boundaries with what they're talking to their kids about. So we all know that our parents' generation, they needed to be spoke to more by their parents. They needed more one-on-one time and they needed deeper conversation. But now we've went a little overboard and we're oversharing with our kids.
Yeah.
I think that we should not dump details that should not be shared. It's okay to share with your child, but remember they're only children. Their entire existence is within the bubble we've created. They do not have an outlet from us or a getaway. So we can get away from our kids. Like we can get a babysitter. They can go to the grandparents for the weekend, but they can't escape this family circle dynamic that we have put them in. So when we overshare with them, they don't have an outlet per se to go escape from that too. Therefore, their minds only consist of what we've allowed them to put into their imagination, along with, of course, their school peers and such. But in the grand scheme of things, their existence is a lot smaller than ours. So when we overshare, they're now carrying and processing much heavier situations than their life experience has yet to allow them to try to organically regulate through these heavy thoughts. It literally is weighing on our kids. If it's a must, that's one thing. Like if you develop cancer and your kid's like 5 or 6 years old, you know, that's going to be a really hard road ahead of them for the next 5, 6 years while you go through that. But if it's self-imposed purposely, consciously or not, they still need to be able to regulate. If they don't, these inner feelings, it's going to combust within them, and that's going to come out in very negative ways. So, and it's going to cause self-destruction, such as depression, sexual exploitation, attention-seeking behaviors, alcohol, isolation, eating disorders. So if you're oversharing, and even if you're not, if you think that your child has a quote-unquote normal life, they still need something to let this out. So I would like to suggest that if you currently have a child that in their free time you're only allowing them to look at tablets, watch TV, get on the computer, play video games, I'm asking you to implement one more thing. Try journaling, art, music, writing music, sports, dance, cheer, a hobby of some type. They need an outlet to balance.
I was just thinking about that, too. It's interesting. In my own family, I had what they call parentification. In other words, I got saddled with all the problems of my family. And at the age of 5, they expected me to be their emotional, you know, pincushion kind of thing. It's like I was responsible for their problems. Yeah. Oh, I heard all my parents' problems. I mean, they complained to me constantly about each other, you know, about the situation in the world, about their various prejudices and all kinds of other things. And I'm like 5, 6 years old listening to this crap. And I'm not buying a lot of it, but it doesn't matter. It still has an effect on you. So you want to talk about oversharing. I know exactly what you're talking about. And the worst part of that is when it gets to what they call parentification, where the kid is expected to be the parent, where the kid is emotionally responsible for the parent, where you almost reverse roles. And that destroys your childhood.
Right.
Trust me, I know. So that's the extreme example. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Now, the cure for me, my own personal salvation, was outlets, exactly as you're talking about. I flew airplanes starting at, you know, 13 years old. You know, I played music from the age of five. I had my world. I had my friends. I had my bicycle. My bicycle took me away from the family. I could go explore. I could be out in nature. I had friends. I could do stuff. I played tennis for like 8 hours a day during spring break and summer holidays. I mean, so there are ways out of this. So, but I don't know if kids do that, because the kids today, their outlets are the video games at home, their internet at home, their phone at home. So all their the outlets that I had, which were away from home, music, flying, bike riding, you know, sports stuff, everything else I was doing, took me away from them. So I wasn't in that environment to be parentified. So that, I think, is a big difference. Does that make sense? What do you think?
It does. And there is a problem there, because parents nowadays can tend to be a little lazy, and they don't want to put their kid in the car and go drop them off at like Art City downtown in Pensacola. You
Why
know
not?
What I'm saying?
That's good.
They
for
don't
want to
do that. Yeah. Ooh. But you know, some parents, you know, they hear something like this and they'll get up and do it. But for those who don't, my parents lived out in the middle of nowhere, so it would have taken an hour or so to get me anywhere. So what I did is, for a half hour or so every once in a while, I would go in my room and I wouldn't have anything on. And I would get something that I'd gotten in a stocking or for Christmas. And it was some little weird craft kit that I really didn't want to do. But I sat there and I gave myself that alone time, that isolation and that silence, so that I could be alone with my own thoughts for a minute, away from my parents saying, "Linz, why are you just staring off into space right now? You know, like, Linz, what's wrong with you? Why do you have that look on your face?" This allowed me to have something to, first of all, while I was processing, I was doing a healthy craft. And second of all, it gave me the privacy I needed to kind of decompress for a moment. Now, I also think that it's important to recommend that parents allow kids, especially if they know that they're the ones oversharing, to give their kids distance during this time. Like, don't sit there right next to them and do the same thing that they're doing while you're trying to allow them to release. You know, you need to step away, go in the other room, give them some space so that they know that this is theirs and you're not going to start imposing your opinions on them, and also respect what they're trying to do as well. Does that make sense?
It does. It does, but parents who are oversharing don't realize they're oversharing. They don't think of this as a problem. They think of this as just sharing. So they don't get it. So now what do you do?
So signs of oversharing would probably be important to share right now. Signs of that is going to be some kind of obvious ones. Because of COVID, a lot of us are down in the dumps a little bit nowadays, and we're experiencing mild depression. So, you know, you can be laying on the couch and the house can get a little bit out of hand. You might notice your older child or your only child starts cleaning up a little bit or starts checking in on you, asking, you know, are you okay? Or what are you doing?
Yeah,
or they're
familiar.
Like, yeah, they're trying to pick up after you and stuff. That's a sign that maybe your kid's taking on your emotional baggage. And you
parentification.
Somehow
that's what, that's it right there. Yeah.
So in this case, if I noticed that my oldest was doing something like that, I would invite him to come sit with me, or I would get up and I would start taking over what they're doing and tell them, you know, how are you? Starts that conversation. You know, there's always a rebound. You just have to be willing to look for it, find it, and take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think it'd be helpful if parents said, "That's not your problem. That's my problem. I'm the adult. I'm the parent. I will handle it."
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I've said that to my child before. Brooklyn, my oldest, has seen me struggle. I mean, I'm a single mother, two children. It hasn't always been easy for me. It isn't even still today. And she's noticed things. And, you know, my honest answer to her sometimes is, "That's not for you to worry about. That's for me. I'm the adult." And she respects that. You know, she's the oldest, though. My youngest, I don't know if I would ever... I think I would be more conscientious with my youngest about.
Well, they
what
got a buffer.
Can...
They got the older kid. I was an older kid. Yeah, Pianki, yeah, go ahead.
You hear what she just said?
What's that?
Could you repeat what you just said again about struggling?
About.
She just. Yeah, say it again.
About how
what you went through.
A single mom and that kind of stuff.
About being a single mother too.
Absolutely.
And yeah,
see, here's the thing that I keep saying. People like it. She's white, and she experienced the same thing that others are experiencing that's not white, but they get all the news.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Well, a lot of my problem is my ego. Like, I know that I could qualify for assistance and stuff like that, but when you're a single mother, your masculine side tends to take a step forward and your feminine side tends to step back into the shadows a little bit, because not only are we now the protectors of our family and our foundation, we're also mm-hmm. the providers. So that causes that masculine energy to come out with the whole, I need to be able to provide for my own without help from people. It's a struggle for me bad.
No, but Pianki makes a really interesting point. I thought he was going to talk about the lack of fathers, which is true. That's a different problem. But there are also people that, you know, there are reasons for divorces and separations that people are not compatible at a certain point. And you don't want to force a situation which could become violent or worse or who knows what will happen. But the point is that there are folks like you who, even if the welfare is available, even if the food stamps are available, even if all these government benefits are available, you're not like the illegal aliens running across the border for the sole purpose of taking other people's money, which was what we were talking
Absolutely.
About earlier with the college loans. So you are doing it on your own. Why? Because that's your character. That's what makes you. That means you have character. That you say, even though there's free money out there, your pride, your sense of accomplishment, your sense of responsibility, your sense of being an adult and being a parent won't let you do that. Well, see, this is what we need more of. And I think that's what Pianki's getting to. Pianki?
That's what I'm getting to, just like you said. Just
good.
You said, when you were in college, you worked.
Mm-hmm.
You wash airplanes.
Yep.
You could have went out and picked tomatoes. You worked. Mm-hmm. You didn't sit back and wait for a grant to come to you, in particular because of your ethnicity.
Mm-hmm. I started a business.
Situation.
Yeah, I started a business.
Everybody should be able to work. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But what is put in front of the eyes and ears of the public is one particular group, and they're using it as a weapon. This lady goes through what she went through. She's just as much entitled as is based it on what the rules say today. So change the rules where it applies to everyone, not just one particular people.
Well, here's an interesting question, too. If it's more acceptable for Black, Hispanic, pick the group, to take welfare than it is for white folks, then what about the people who are Black and Hispanic and other groups that don't want to? Are they pressured even more? So what's wrong with you? You're Black. Why aren't you taking welfare? So the prejudice works both ways. It's a strange dynamic.
To me, it's like an economic thing. It's not so much of a color thing. It's more of a race thing. It's a
character thing. Trust me, it's a character thing.
Yeah. Yes.
But if worse came to worse, if you lost a job, lost an economic source, lost something, you would take that for the preservation of your family.
Yes, I would. If I was on my last leg, I would definitely do what I had to do to keep things going here at the house.
Which makes sense. That's what it's for. It's not the automatic response. You know, you shouldn't be having kids so you can go on welfare. Welfare is there if everything goes wrong, and it happens, and I don't begrudge people this, when everything goes wrong, but it's not a permanent thing. So if everything goes wrong, I mean, everything goes wrong in your life, and you need
mm-hmm.
that assistance, that's what it's for. You shouldn't hesitate for a moment to go for that assistance if you've done everything else that you can to not get it. And if everybody had that same attitude, we'd have, you know, 1/100th of the welfare that we have for those people that really have tried everything else first. And that's what it's for. And you wouldn't take it forever. You wouldn't have three generations of Lindsays, you know, on welfare.
No.
You take it for a limited time. You get off it.
You can't qualify for it forever. Uh-huh. I mean, if you're going by the materials that they give you, you're not mm-hmm. going to be able to qualify for it forever, because you will be successful and get back up on your feet. That's mm-hmm. what I don't get, is how many people are fraudulent, are getting it without actually trying.
That's for votes. That's how Democrats buy votes, but that's another story. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So parental sharing, this is fascinating because, like I say, the extreme is parentification, and I think that's what you're getting to. Do you think these people know, these parents know, that if they're oversharing, they're on the road to parentification, and they're actually committing emotional and mental abuse on their children? Do they understand that at all?
I don't think they do. And then I think what happens is instead they think that, like, their kids, something's wrong with their kid, and then they go put their kid in therapy thinking the therapist will fix their kid, when really the parent needs to go to therapy to understand that they should, that this is heavy stuff that they're saying out loud. Because the therapist, mm-hmm. if you sit down and talk to the therapist about what you're saying in front of your kid, your therapist is going to look at you and empathize, and they're going to let you know that you're going through a stressful situation. Now, mm-hmm. a person with common sense would then take a step back and be like, wow, a professional is telling me that this is a hard situation. Maybe I shouldn't be sharing with my child like this, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
But I don't think that that's ever going to be the common way of addressing it. So, like I said, if you are the oversharer and you might not be aware of it, we've given you some signs, you know, look for your child either over-isolating themselves or coming and checking on you, acting more mature than they should, wise beyond their years, if you will. Take time one-on-one to sit with them. Make sure that you're giving them an outlet so that they don't have that inner combustion moment of self-destruction. Because once the self-destruction sets in, then you will have to seek professional help to allow your child to learn how to healthy regulate their emotions.
Well, it's almost like children have to learn to be children. If they're being treated as parents by the parents, and their parents are treating themselves like children, then you have to show kids that that's wrong, that there's a mistake, that there's a problem here. This sounds like a family therapy thing, because you've got abusive parents
that
don't realize they're abusing. But go ahead.
The problem is we've taught parents that between the ages of, let's say, 2, 3, and 5, between mm-hmm. that age range, that now we want our child to put words to their emotions. You know, you get eye level with them, hold their hands, and you tell them to tell you how they're feeling, how that makes them feel. That's so healthy. Don't get me wrong. It is very healthy. Mm-hmm. But when you're doing this, you're telling yourself that's how you should be towards your child too, and that's not correct. We're teaching our children how to open up to us, but that doesn't mean that we return that to that level, you know? It's okay to say, hey, you're kicking the coffee table, you're tapping on the coffee table, that's annoying me, but it's not okay to say, the bills are all late, the power's going to be shut off, and this is stressing me out, you know? Like, use common sense.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, you know another thing.
No, I think that makes sense. Go ahead, Bianchi.
You know, another thing, too, raising a child should be a family responsibility, not just the parents, because it's not being done. It's not getting done. The whole family, the grandparents, the aunts, the uncles, the decision should be made at a family level. It's that way if you're laying on the bed about to die, they only let certain people speak for the patient. Mm-hmm. So the responsibility should lie on the whole family, just not a single parent or one particular set of parents.
Well, they call it the nuclear family. You know what happens to nuclear things? They explode. So, yeah. Well, and there was a time when it was almost the opposite extreme, where everybody was part of an extended family, and the family actually restricted you. But there's a balance in there. I had an extended family in Canada, and I had one in Australia. And in both cases, you know, my folks moved me away from that to isolated places, like, you know, to different cities. Then we came to the United States, where I had no extended family whatsoever, and my folks divorced not that long after we got here. And so I had, you know, here I'm in a strange country with no family and no connection to this place whatsoever. And I built one. But it's interesting when you're that disconnected, you kind of look at extended families and go, wouldn't that be really cool to be part of an extended family where, you know, you could talk to people, you talk to your uncle or cousin or aunt or somebody, you know, related that actually has an interest in you. I mean, that would be a nice thing. And those folks can then talk to your parents and say you're sharing a little too much with your kid. You know, your uncle would talk to your whichever one they're related to, your mother or father, and say, you know what? I tried that once, and here's why this doesn't work. You know, so all these, so they can help each other, and they're sort of, you know, they're backing up each other. You know, I got your back. And here's what you're doing wrong. You know, or however they talk to each other. But there's a great part of extended families. You know, and so I had it for a short time, and then it disappeared. And it's like, you know, it would have been nice to actually have that kind of thing. Do you think that's a difference too? That because of the lack of extended families, everybody moves around, especially military families, they're all over the place. They never get a chance to deal with an extended family. That's got to have an effect on the parents, where they're the only source of information and responsibility. They can't go to their parents, which are, 10,000 miles away.
That, and it gives them that, like, godlike mentality when they're parenting, too. That's when you get those very extreme belief systems passed down to kids. Like, it can, to me, that
can
become a very controlling family dynamic. Well, because there is nobody, what's the word I'm looking for? There is nobody going against what their opinion is towards their parenting style. So
checks and balances.
Say,
like government. Yeah.
So it's like, they're going to decide absolutely where you go to school, what you're allowed to wear, what you're allowed to eat, what influences you, everything like that. Whereas in a support family system, everybody, like you said, is checking the other one. Like, hey, so-and-so said that you said this, and why did you say that? Do you think that's something that we should be talking about? Brooklyn has that. My daughter does, and it's very healthy. Sometimes we all have different opinions, and sometimes we don't. In the end, it comes back to me. Lindsay makes the final decision.
Well, you're supposed to. The kids count on you doing that. They can suggest things, but they count on you making that decision, so they don't have to. You've relieved them of that burden. Yeah. Pianki, did you have a comment?
Yeah. Well, they all show up at the funeral.
Yeah.
They all show up at the funeral, but they all are not there to make the decisions that led to the person to be laying up there in the casket. We have to change the way we think. We have to change the way we act. When you got a star athlete, he's expected to share his wealth with all of the family. They helped them up. But all the family was not there to help direct him in the academics that should go along with the athletics.
That's the Henny Penny philosophy of baking bread. It's like, if you didn't grow the wheat, cut the wheat, grind the wheat, make the dough, bake the bread, you can't eat the bread. I'm of that philosophy too. So if you do the work, you get the reward. We have to go in a couple of minutes because I got to get ready for
That is okay. I have a client today at 10:45, so I need to get out and get ready for all that.
Okay. So contact information, anything you want to share for folks to get a hold of you? Do you have anything yet?
So my name is Lindsay Horton. I work at Gulf Breeze Energetics in Gulf Breeze. We're now going to be at Fifth Element in Pace, I believe, starting next week as well. I have clients on Mondays and Wednesdays. If you would like to set up a session with me, you can email me at lghorton33@gmail.com. Thank you, Greg. I had a great conversation with you today. Pianki, it was great hearing from you today, too.
Well, I got to go drop in the Fifth Element. When are you guys there?
Well, I'm told that we're opening there tomorrow, but it's probably going to be more like next week.
All right. Well, I'll have to do a remote. Let's do a little video from there. Yeah, it's closer than Gulf Breeze. Yeah, it's one less bridge. It's a lot closer. Say it again?
There by Whataburger on Woodbine, Five Points.
Okay. That might not mean a lot to the folks in Azerbaijan who are listening, but it's good to know.
Sorry, I'm more directing that at you.
No, I know that. But this is the funny thing, too. Well, especially our audiences are growing all over the world, but especially in the English-speaking world, which makes sense because that's what we're talking about here. But there's a lot of exciting things happening. And so thank you, Lindsay. We'll talk to you next week. And Pianki, I'll talk to you, I'm sure, tomorrow. But just to let folks know that frankspeech.com, I'm going to be appearing at the top of the hour. So it's about 8:33 now. I just got to, like I say, rearrange some furniture, look like I'm presentable for TV. And Emerald Robinson's going to talk about or ask me about our bill on vaccine product liability, which I now know how to describe, thanks to Pianki, who says, get it out there. You get to sue for damages and death. And so that's really what it's all about, is to give people the power to get something and hold these people accountable. And Pianki, just let me ask you one last question. If this bill should get through Congress and be signed into law, how long do you think these current messenger RNA snake oil jabs known as vaccines will be on the market if they're fully liable for the consequences of those things?
It's going to be added room on the shelves. They're going to be pulled.
They're going to be pulled immediately, you think?
Oh, yes, if it passes.
Yeah. That's interesting. Which means
just like, this is like throwing money in the street, going up on the fifth floor, throwing money out the window. It won't stay there on the ground long. You don't never have to worry about that littering. That litter, it would be picked up.
Money, yeah, but money's litter. Yeah, if litter is money, then it's never have to. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing too. And if they're that safe, then they shouldn't. They have no fear of liability. If these products are safe and effective, they have no fear of liability lawsuits because they're safe and effective. Well, there might be one problem and something there. You can deal with it. But the fact is that they're not safe and they're not effective. And that's why they can't have any liability, because if they actually had to be responsible for the consequences of their actions, as Bianchi said, there'd be room on the shelves. All right, let me get out of here for today. Just play one.
Good luck.
Be careful.
Thank you. Thank you all. Well, listen, you're all coming with me. You know, the bigger the show gets, the bigger we all get, and the further our message goes. And that's what it's all about.
Well, you only got 8 minutes.
No, I got 25 minutes.
Well, I'm talking about where you're going to the other show.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, it's at the top of the hour. So we're good. I got 25
minutes. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So go to frankspeech.com. I'll be there. Actually, you will be able to see it at noon Eastern, 11 Central. Then again, it's 4 Eastern, 3 Central, and the rest of the time zones, you guys have figured it out. I'll be back tomorrow. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. And don't forget our legislative website, which is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. If you want to advertise on our show, contact me, Greg@writeyourlaws.com. We've got a PayPal site here. You can go to paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio. If you'd like to donate, if you're like at the Heritage Foundation and you want to see something actually done, send it to us at Action Radio. Anyway, I'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow is Thursday, so we have our World's Greatest Doctors panel. And actually, Emma Robinson is going to be on our show getting a special briefing from John Cullen, the data expert, who actually made the technology that allowed Johns Hopkins to make their COVID map. So I'm not going to give it away, but you really want to be here tomorrow for that. I mean, you really want to be here tomorrow for that. Trust me. Talk to you later after my interview.